I don't know what it does. I think it dilates your pupils. Oh, it sends the passion rushing in great torrents through that eternal sewage system of the soul. Yes, crashing against the rocks of reality. Yes, indeed. Speaking of the rocks of reality, has it occurred to you that the Village Voice is getting to be America's outstanding humor paper, unconsciously? I mean, I don't know, it just sort of vaguely slipped over the line, you know? Like today, Gregory Corso said, I exhausted Europe. Well, which is the greatest line that I've heard since a line that I once heard W.C. Fields say in the movie, but he did it deliberately. But then again, that's another, you know, the problem. It's so easy to get hung up. I think it's the problem of becoming hung up. And tonight we're going to take as our text the major problem of becoming hung up. Now, I take as my basic premise that everybody's hung up on something. Now, it's often hard to tell what a guy is hung up on because being hung up can be made into a positive virtue if your footwork is fast enough. Now, we must begin tonight's diatribe by illustrating being hung up. For example, we have a note here that comes from the Newark Star-Ledger. And it's from Turin, Italy. Rinaldo Giarelli, a 42-year-old lush, figured out a way to keep himself to his pledge of temperance. First, he placed the bottle of wine he had brought home on the far side of his living room. All right, you got the picture. It's on the far side of his living room. He brings the bottle home. He places it on the far side. That means away from him. Next, he went over to the radiator and attached himself to it by a stout dog chain, too short to allow him to cross the room. Thirdly, he padlocked the chain. Fourth, he threw the key out of reach beyond the bottle. When Raniero lay down on the rug to go to sleep, the setup looked perfect. Soberer as a judge. In the morning, however, when he tried to get up, crumpled, thirsty, and hungry. He found nothing could be done. His radius was only 5 feet. Too short to reach key, window, door, telephone, or vino. For 2 days and nights, Raniero screamed, pounded, and yelled. The neighbors thought he was just having another spell of DDT. The third morning, the mailman heard his plaintive laments through the door. He summoned the janitor. The janitor let him out. Raniero then proceeded to look for the key.
Bravissimo, Raniero! Bravissimo!
Hold it there. Now, that's what I mean by getting hung up. Now, you see, the problem with getting hung up, this is a manifold problem. You want me to do sing it for you? Matter of fact, I might do just that. You don't happen to have my music.
Oh, it's magnifico, magnifico. Maria. Napolino, Torino. Oh, mamma mia.
Not a dry eye in the house. Boy, that's taking the old wash rag and wringing it right down to the last squeak. Well, now, I don't know. Tonight, since it's, you know, speaking of getting hung up, you know, sneakiness knows no bounds. Do you know that they just discovered recently? If you think Reniero is in a bad way, do you know that they just discovered one of the great, all-time greats of the bird-watching world? The Babe Ruth and the Ted Williams of the bird-watching world, who was a great bird-watcher, who worked in the early 1900s, who spotted more rare birds than anybody in the whole history of bird-watching in England, where bird-watching, believe me, is a serious sport. They just discovered, years after the guy died, that he was a phony. That he was importing frozen, dead birds from other countries, sneaking them in the dead of night. Oh, man! Where can you turn? Ah, Pagliacci! Hold it there. Crying out loud. The next thing you know, my pancreas is going to be kicking. Well, you know, where you're going to turn? You get hung. That's all I can say. You get hung up. Like I'm just going to have to tell you, I've had some experience, and all of us know, once in a while, you know, we get hung. Mankind, you can get hung on hate, you can get hung on love, you can get hung. What really mostly everybody today is hung on is their own importance. Most people are literally hung on their own ego. It is around it, that ego, that thing, that me, that I, that meissimo. Around that little thing revolves like a gigantic series of enormous bicycle spokes the entire universe. And so it's perfectly fitting that Corso could say, I exhausted Europe. You know, it could never be the other way around. If you feel that way, you can also feel the earth is flat. If you work hard enough at it. I mean, there are people who still do, you know, out in the Midwest. There are flat earthers. In fact, I'm surprised that they haven't shown up on the Long John show. Yes, don't you know this? Oh, come on. There was a town not more than 35 miles from where I lived as a kid whose entire school system, the entire school system of the town, as far as I know, even to this day, this is not like 100 years ago, to this day, they taught in that town school system that the earth was flat. And it was illegal to teach anything else. Yeah, I'll give you the brass figgly, Dad, if you can tell me who. Do you know that there have been many towns in America that have had dictators? Literally dictators, just exactly like Mussolini was a dictator in Italy and like Hitler was a dictator in. And I'm not talking about political bosses either. I'm talking about absolute dictators who didn't even bother to have parties. Are you aware of that? Well, this guy was a dictator in this town. He was really a dictator. In the best, worst sense of the word. And the guy who operated this town, well, one of the things he believed was that the earth was flat. So he just made it illegal for anybody to teach that the earth was anything other than flat. I will award you a brass figgy with bronze oak leaf palm if you can tell me that man's name. I'm telling you, it's a real man. He just died a few years ago, and you know what they taught? You know how they taught what the stars were out there in that town? You wouldn't believe it. They taught that the stars were only 25 to 30 miles away from the earth. That's right. And they were actually holes in... Yeah, I don't know how they had them. I think they had... I think they had the sky figured out as a gigantic piece of velour, some kind of velvet, and there were holes in it. And the sun would shine up there somewhere at night, and it would shine through these holes, and those were the stars. I'm telling you the truth. These were the flat earthers. And as far as I know, they're still teaching it out there. Well, don't worry about getting hung up, Dad. You are just No. Huey Long. Huey Long was a political boss. I'm talking about a dictator. See, a political boss comes out of a system. In other words, if a guy gets to be the head of the, we'll say, the Republican Party, or he gets to be the head of the Democratic Party in the neighborhood, and he runs absolutely completely that party. Well, that is a political boss. However, a dictator doesn't even recognize parties. There's no such thing as a party. He invents his own party. It's like if it was the Ed Zajac Party. You know, there would be the Democrats, there would be the Republicans, there would be the Socialists, there would be the Vegetarians, there would be the Flat Earthers, and then there would be the Ed Zajac Party. Well, now that's the dictator party. You see, they just hit everybody on top of the head, and that's the end of it. There is no more parties. Don't you see the difference between the dictator and a political boss? Sure. Big difference, Dad. Big, big difference. Because a political boss, you see, comes up through the recognized system, and the system is there. No, he does not destroy the system, literally. Whereas a dictator, as soon as he gets in, there ain't no more parties. Just forget it. No more parties. That's the end of it all, you know. It's just me. And isn't it interesting? Nobody remembers this guy's name. You remember the name, all right? You write it down there. You just write it down there. And speaking of the dictatorial, it's funny how these little things remind. This is WOR AM and FM in New York, and we got a little thingy in there, Ed. So punch the button there. Go ahead. It's very scary, isn't it, being part of this brave new world? Well, did somebody remember him? That's right. They got the town's name, but the name of the town, you're right. Absolutely. Somebody called in the name of the town, but who was the guy? He was literally a dictator till the day he died. And he absolutely established, and it was famous. You know what? I'll tell you what was famous about this town. There were several things famous about it. Among other things, this town, which was a town in Illinois, this town made its own traffic laws that were like any dictatorship, were completely, absolutely flexible. In other words, if a guy drove in from, say, Indiana, forget it. As soon as you got into town, you had an Indiana plate, pow, $40 just to drive through town, that's all. They'd get you for your wheels turning too fast, or your windows are cloudy, or all kinds of wild things. And the newspapers around there used to publish warnings to all motorists, like the Chicago Tribune would publish a warning on its, let's say, its travel page, you know, like the Times has a travel page, stay out of this town. And they would literally say, how to get around this town. They have all different detours, like how to detour around the Grand Canyon. It was a fantastic trap, and it had nothing to do with speeding yet. Now, for example, they decided at one point, or let's say this dictator decided at one point, that it was absolutely illegal, completely, thoroughly, utterly illegal to smoke in the town. And if you drove into town and you were from Wisconsin and you had, that's right, and you were smoking a cigar, forget it, 10 days. Or you'd shell out $100. Do you know that at one point in this town, they made it illegal to wear cosmetics in the city limits? That meant, I'm telling you the truth, that meant if the cop caught you coming into town, say you were driving through, you didn't know about the town, say, and you were coming from California or someplace, you happened to come through this town, and somebody was wearing lipstick, forget it. They just grab you, and they take the money right out of your pocket, and that was it. You had no recourse. It was the law of the town. It was a fantastic place. And they really did teach that the earth was flat. And now, how long ago do you think they taught that? I'll tell you this. They were teaching the earth is flat as recent as 1950 in this town. So everybody thinking this is 100 years. Oh, no. This is just like current. So you figure about the hang-ups, Dad. Listen to, I'll tell you about hang-ups. I'm going to have to tell you the town. Yes, you were right about the name of the man. So the Bass Figligy goes to that one poor listener who probably shelled out once when he was riding his bicycle too fast through town at the age of 17. This guy was a very, very interesting place. However, dictators have existed in America in many places. Guys who really did run a town absolutely lock, stock, barrel. They owned every trash can. And they had taken over the town and had muscled their way into such a position that you just couldn't... it was a dictatorship, just exactly like any other dictatorship. Now, of course, the one thing that makes this kind of dictatorship different than, say, if you were in Germany, we'll say, or in Italy during the or in Russia, is that if it really got bad in this town, you could just run away. But if you were going to stay in this town, that was it. They had rules. For example, they would not allow any movies in town. Absolutely illegal to have a movie in this town. Completely illegal. And their speed limit in the town, ostensibly, the speed limit was 10 miles per hour. Now, actually, what the speed limit was, that was just a nominal speed limit, because what they really meant was you better not drive through town. That's all. The minute you got near the town, the net would be thrown over you. and they would take your money, and you would try to sneak out to the other side of town, hoping that the guy, the cop on the other side, wouldn't get you for leaving town too fast. Or just leaving town between the hours of 2 and 3 could be illegal all of a sudden. All kinds of things were illegal in this town that you just couldn't conceive of. Well, the entire educational system of the town was based on that sort of thing. Whatever the guy believed, that's what the educational system taught. You know, this was a very common thing, and is still very common among dictatorships to this day. For example, Hitler. Hitler is a good example of that. That Hitler had certain genetic theories, so all the scientists had to teach his system of genetics. That's it. That was the end of it. That was what was taught in the universities in Hitler's day. It also holds true, today, even to this day, during the latter days of the Stalin period. Stalin had certain ideas about plant life, certain things that had to do with agriculture. And so there was a famous, very, very worldwide discredited agriculturist who completely took over practically the entire educational system as far as agriculture was concerned, because that's what Stalin believed, and that's the end of it. Now, it is quite true that many people, in a strange way, would like to see that happen in their own town, as long as it's what they believe that's made legal. You realize, of course, that continually people in towns are demanding that certain books be burnt. In fact, there have been three or four guys. There's a guy right now in the news who was caught by this town, caught by the elderly ladies of the town and several elderly waffled gentlemen who went into the school board, had this guy fired merely because he recommended that the students read 1984, which is a recognized English 20th century classic. Well, why? You know, the point being that they just don't want to have anything said that doesn't fit their concept. This is a kind of being hung up on yourself to the exclusion of everybody else's attitudes. Even though, and what makes those people really angry is to have whatever it is they're hung up on proven wrong. That is the worst thing you can do. Now, you would think that any normal, intelligent human being, if he's wrong about something, would want to have him, you know, have it shown to him that he is wrong. Thereby, if he is wrong, maybe he can, you know, go out. No, many people revel in their wrongness. Absolutely revel in it. And that was a wonderful example of this town where they taught the earth is flat. And that was the end of it. It could not possibly be any other way. And he had all kinds of theories about, for example, what happens when you reach the edge of the earth. It was square. It was. He didn't teach it was square. He taught it was more like a shingle. And he didn't say it was square. It was flat. It was flat. And if you ask him what was on the bottom, he said all the roots of the trees or something like that, you know. and it was taught. And they had books printed and everything, real books. They looked like books. And they had pictures and diagrams and maps in them like any other, like any other book has. And I just wonder how many people are still out there who are products of that school system who are now walking around like other people, wearing glasses and voting. just a little passing thought. Well, I'll have to tell you about the time I got hung on something. As long as we're here, I can speak with some authority, because there was one time in my life I literally got completely hung up. Absolutely hung up. And I'll tell you how it happened. I'm a kid, see, and this has nothing to do with nostalgia. Forget it. If you think it's nostalgia, get it out of your skull. I don't know why. Look, when you're talking about nostalgia, please get in touch with Peggy Fitzgerald. Don't get in touch with me. I have no connection whatsoever with nostalgia. And I, about every third day, somebody writes me a note and says, Mr. Shepherd, I understand you want to know where you can get penny candy. I hate penny candy. I hated it when I was a kid. I can't stand penny candy. Believe me, Dad, I had expensive taste when I was a kid, and whenever I could get close to Fanny Farmer at the age of 9, I made it. Forget it. I was never a bubblegum man, and I never went for jujubes. I never went for rubber bananas. I never went for any of this jazz. I hated penny candy. For some reason or other, those crummy little rotten artificial peanuts that they sold in the dime store, even today, make my eyeballs turn green when I think about them. They're awful. It always made me think of banana oil. Did I ever tell you about the time the banana oil truck cracked up right in the middle of town when I was a kid? You couldn't go back to penny candy after that. That is a great big tank truck with about 87 million gallons of banana oil. Got bashed right in the middle by an enormous Buick. It was the Buick Dictator model or something. It had great big iron spikes on the front. Anyway, he busted this tank truck right in the middle. And the whole town was knee-deep, awash in banana oil for about 6 months. Woo-hoo! I can't go back to penny candy after that. Forget it. So don't contact me. Whenever you have a little weepy thought about how great it was when you were a kid, write to Peggy, and she's hung on that stuff. Not old Shep. Forget it. All I remember was my knee hurt all the time when I was a kid. Now stop. And by the way, do not also contact me. Don't confuse me with Holden Caulfield. I was not an infallible phony spotter. Hey, how many infallible phony spotters are there out there? How many 16-year-old, of course, 16-year-old can be any age. How many of you out there are absolutely infallible spotting phonies? Raise your hands, all of you. Look at that forest out there. Phony spotters. Funny thing about the phony spotters is that they're all looking at each other. You know? So I don't know. The infallible phony spotter, is there a kid out there who can absolutely spot a phony all the time, every time, never miss? He's an absolute conceit. The phony spotters always intrigue me. You find the greatest collection of phony spotters in the Village Voice. They can spot a phony all the time, invariably. Just absolutely, and I appreciate that. That's a wonderful quality. I wish we all had it. You know, we can just spot the phony always, and no question about it. I guess everybody's a phony who doesn't write for The Voice. I mean, maybe that's one of the definitions, but that's another story. You know, getting back to the problem of being hung, I must have been about 16. Yeah, I was 16, as a matter of fact. 15. Yeah, it was 15. Yeah, I'm thinking chronologically. I got my ticket when I was 14. Yeah, okay. So I'm 15 years old. Now, hang up there. We don't have time. I'm 15 years old, see? And I want to tell you how I got hung up. How I got hung up was this way. I'm going to school, see, like all the other kids. And, you know, I'm sort of a half-baked flub. I don't quite make it in algebra. I make the scene pretty good in geography. But I have, to this day, I cannot diagram a sentence. So that was a pain in the thing, you know. And so I'm sitting around in school, and I'm about 15. Well, when I was 14, I got hung on radio. But it wasn't immediate, you see. It was not a complete hang-up. It's like, what was his name? What was that guy in Turin? Raniero Giorelli. Well, I'm sure that the first couple of glasses of wine he had when he was a kid, it didn't completely make him a nut, you know. He didn't have to chain himself to the radiator the first 5 minutes. Well, that's the way I was with the ham radio. Well, I reached a point when I'm 15 years old, Ed, and I'm on 40-meter CW. And one weekend it got me. I'm sitting there, and I had built up a rig, and for a long time, for about the first 6 months in my amateur radio career, I couldn't even contact myself. My signal was so weak, Ed, that I couldn't even light a 1-watt neon bulb on my plate coil on the tank. I just couldn't do it. So you can see I wasn't making it across. I had less chance of working DX in my first year on amateur radio than the average guy that has a phonograph oscillator has of working Moscow. You just don't do it. You know, I couldn't make it. I couldn't make the scene. So amateur radio, it was very almost an abstraction to me. Well, I made a little money working on this paper route, and I kept saving it. And one day, I was able to buy myself a 6L6. Well, a 6L6 is a tube. It means nothing to any of you, but let me say this. It's a tube. And this is a beam power pentode. Well, now, this tube made it possible for me, using maybe $10 of my hard-earned life savings, to put enough power on the air... to actually talk to guys on the air. Actually happened. Well, here's what happened. One Saturday, when I got my rig all working, I built this rig, you see. And I built it, I got the diagrams, and I'm working away there, and I'm down in the basement, and I finally get this thing working, and I finally get it neutralized, which was an insane situation itself. You know, it was advertised as non-neutralization. Oy, yo, 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 yo. That thing had more parasitic oscillations, believe me, than a 100-year-old scow sitting in the East River has barnacles on the bottom of it. I had more parasitics. That oscillator, if any of you are interested, it was a 6L6 oscillator. That oscillator had parasitics so bad all over the place. That parasitic's insane. This means nothing to you, but I'm talking to the hams. I had a tritet, a 56 tritet oscillator driving the 6L6. That thing was so insane as far as parasitics are concerned that my transmitter would be on the air 2 hours after I turned it off. Just out of sheer anger on all the wrong bands. Well, anyway, I finally got this thing neutralized, and I got on one Saturday afternoon, and I came on the air on 40 meters. Well, I'm on 5 minutes, and I'm in contact with somebody. I'm talking to a guy on code. Do you know anything about code, any of you? Well, code is dot dash, you know. All right, you see, so I'm talking to a guy in Cleveland. It's now about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's working. I'm talking to this guy. Beautiful. And we have this great QSO. I finish. I stand by. A guy in South Dakota comes back. Just like that. Well, I'm talking to this guy in South Dakota, and he goes off the air. We finish. Now I'm on about an hour. See, I'm insanely working. And the next thing, I'm talking to a guy in Buffalo. Well, geez, great. So I finished talking to this guy. On comes a guy in Toronto. Well, let me tell you what happened. It was the first time I had ever had any kind of success at all. And so I immediately got hung up. It was incredible. I was hung up. It was like there was a spike through my neck, and I was hung on the wall. I couldn't get off. My mother starts to holler about 7 o'clock. I started about 2 in the afternoon. She starts yelling about supper. Everybody's sitting around having supper, and I can't hear anything. I got the cans, and I can hear nothing but code, and all the guys are on. The band is wide open. I'm working. And she, oh, supper, hurry up. Ah, great out loud, Mom. Come on, cut it out. I'm not hungry. Ah. Well, she finally said, okay, then don't expect me to make you anything later. All right. So I'm in there working away. It's now 10 o'clock. I'm insane. My eyeballs are popping. I haven't gone to the gym. I have nothing. You know, I haven't done anything. I'm just working in there. I'm sweating. And now it's 1 o'clock in the morning. Everybody's in bed. I'm still working. And the guys are coming in from W6 country. They're coming in from the West Coast. 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm still working. And the guys are starting to thin out. You know, there's hardly anybody on. And I'm going around. I'm trying to find guys. I'm working them. Finally, it's 7 in the morning. The guys are coming back on. And I start working guys in Cleveland again. It is now noon. I'm still working. I can't stop now. I'm sitting there. My eyes are propped open. Forgetting. Have you ever gotten so hung on a book you can't sleep or anything you're reading? Well, I am hung. And I'm working now. It's about 1 o'clock. My mother comes in, and I'm just sweaty. I'm rotten. I haven't slept. And it's becoming rote. It's insane. I hear code. I just hear it. Code is all around me. So my mother comes in and says, you're going to have to cut it out. Now go to sleep. Now cut it out. Haven't you gone to bed? No. Cut it out. Oh, for crying. My old man comes in. They're yelling and hollering. It's Sunday. There's, they're yelling, screaming. Finally, they drag me out of my place, you know, my shack. They literally drag me out. My mother takes me in the kitchen and says, now you're going to have to eat. And she whips up some eggs and some Wheaties, and I'm sitting there, and I'm shoveling it down. I can hardly wait to get back in. I'm hearing the code, you know. It's in my head. I can hear it. I'm working guys even when I'm not working guys now. So I'm sitting there. I eat like mad. And she says, now you're going to have to go to bed. You're going to absolutely going to have to go to bed. I'm not going to stand for this nuttiness. Now go to bed. You're going to get yourself sick. You're going to go. So I go reading in the bed. I sleep for about 5 minutes, you know, sleeping all the while, hearing code. I jump up. As soon as the house is quiet, I know I can get away with it. They're out squirting the lawn or something, you know. I jump up. I mean, all the switches are on like nuts. I can understand Ranieri in Italy, you know. He's got to chain himself away from his rig. So I turn all the switches on. And immediately, guys are coming in. I'm in touch with a guy now. I'm talking to a guy in Kansas City. I finish him. Somehow I I got into my skull, I wanted to talk to everybody in the Western world. Everybody in the Western Hemisphere. Everybody. I want to work all the hands. I want to work 7,000 guys. And so I work and work and work. My mother comes in from outside, and of course, here I am. I'm sitting there in my pajamas. My eyeballs still hanging out. Now they're green, purple, red. They're like neon. And I got the cans on my head. I work like mad. Well, finally, at absolutely sheer exhaustion, it must have been about 10 o'clock on Sunday. I have worked like, say, 48 straight hours the whole rotten weekend. Well, I'm in a vague state of hysteria, you know? And each time I say, all right, I've had it. And just as I had it, I hear, boo, 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 boo. And so I hear this guy, here we go, I'm working like mad. Well, finally, I'm just absolutely exhausted. Completely, thoroughly, utterly strung out, exhausted, hung. Well, my mother finally gets me in. My father's yelling. My kid brother's under the daybed crying. They're all yelling like mad. Bruner is banging out of the windows to shut up next door. So they finally get me into the sack. Well, let me tell you what happened. When you're really hung, you can't sleep. When you're really hung, you can't sleep. So I slept for about 3 hours, and I woke up and I looked up, and the ceiling is black. It's black. And I have my great big clock. At one point, I went through a clock fixing period as a kid where I had picked up old clocks out in the junkyard, and I had fixed about 9 great big old fat nickel plated alarm clocks. And I had this great big alarm clock, this giant Benz. You know, the kind that makes that click, boing, click, boing, click, boing. And it's over there, and it says 1:30, 1:30, 1:30. Oh, for crying out loud, 1:30. The K7s are coming in. I'm in the dark now. You see, I know I can't get away with it. So I am working in the dark. The only light you see is the dim light of my filaments. All you can see in the sinister darkness is the dim light of my filaments, and once in a while, you see the vague flicker of my 83 mercury vapor rectifier. And I work, and it is all of a sudden light. Just like that. All of a sudden, it is light. It is light. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, and I hear my mother gun. She walks out of the kitchen, and I don't know. You know, I'm sitting there with the cans on it, and my mother all of a sudden discovers that I'm in that crummy bedroom. She comes in, bellows, what time did you get up? I said, well, I just got up. I just got up. I got up about 10 minutes ago. I just got up. Well, of course, she could see I hadn't just got up. My eyeballs are now hanging like those rubber balls at the end of the long rubber strings. They're bouncing on the floor, you know. They're 20 feet away, and they're hopping up and down. And once in a while, they'd hop back into my skull and bounce out. And I'm sitting there. My hair is all sticking up, and I'm sweaty. And there's a certain desperation that comes into your eyes when you're really hung. Well, it was time for school, so I had to go to school. So I get to school, and I'm sitting there all through the advisory period. Miss Snyder's up there droning on, you know, and all I can hear in my skull is... And I'm thinking, I hear the sounds coming. It's just... Hold it there, Hetty. Oh, no, not now. The other one, the one where I'm hung. The big one, boy. I'm sitting in there. Yeah, you know. Wait, hold it there. No, Ruggieri. Cut it out, man. You're still chained to that thing. Well, anyway, I all the way through that day in school, I'm walking in a dream. I have not slept all weekend. You know that scene of walking in a dream? Well, I get about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, about a half an hour before school is out, I get elated. You know the elation period that sets in when you haven't slept for about... You become extremely acute. Yeah, you get very elated, you know, and everything starts becoming bigger than life. Realer than realer, you know. It gets wilder and wilder, and it's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm sitting in this class, Mr. Harris's class. We had a class in civics. And it's a very dull, rotten class. And Mr. Harris is up there with his glasses bobbing up and down, and he's talking about voting, and he's talking about the referendum and all that stuff, and he's up there jabbering away. And suddenly, this seemed to me to be very funny.
And I'm sitting there, and I'm boffing it up. I'm laughing, you know. And I'm out of my skull. I'm laughing. Harris, you know. And Harris looks at me. What's the matter with you? And I'm boffing it up, and everybody's looking at me, and I don't see why they don't see it so funny. And I'm just laughing away there and hollering. And finally, Harris says, come here, will you? He calls me up to his desk, and he says, I'm taking you down to the nurse. Well, that seemed even funnier, and I'm screaming like mad, you know, and I can hear this code going through my head. W6s are coming in, and I'm yelling and hollering. They take me down to the nurse, and I don't understand why they're not laughing. What's the matter with you? It's funny. It's very funny. And I'm sitting there in the nurse's thing, and the doctor's looking at me, and they're sticking thermometers in me, and I'm sitting there. Well, hold it there. Suddenly, it just kind of cleared up, and I got very tired. I got very rotten feeling. I developed this enormous headache. 400 pygmies are beating tom-toms in my head. Ka-tung, 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 ka-tung. But what are they beating? They're beating out a CQ. Ka-tung. 15 minutes later, I'm on the school bus, and I'm working W-5s all the way on the way home. You know, I'm sitting there. I got the bug in my hand. I'm working away. I finally roar off that bus like a shot out of... like a bat out of hell. I run out of the bus, up and into the house, up the stairs, into my pad. I got the switches on. I work for about 15 minutes, and I pass out completely. Absolutely out, with the cans on my head and the whole bit. I slept for 20 straight hours. 20 straight hours. So I've been there. Ranieri? Ranieri? Old man? I understandissimo. I know how it is. I know.